Hey everyone, did you know that radio is more popular now than ever? A new feature here at Family Talk we're excited to announce. It's called the Station Finder feature. This is Dr. Tim Clinton for Family Talk. I want to tell you how you can listen to our daily broadcast on a station near you. Go to the broadcast menu at drjamesdobson.org, then click on the Family Talk radio stations button. Once you're there, you're going to see an interactive map of radio affiliates, which, by the way, is growing every day. Simply click on your home state, and then you'll see where our broadcast is airing in your town. Stop randomly spinning around the dial, hoping to find Dr. Dobson and Family Talk. Go to drjamesdobson.org and take advantage of this brand new Station Finder feature.
Today on Family Talk.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, in 2017, nearly 40 million people in America lived in poverty. So who exactly is responsible to help these needy people?
When Jesus was confronted with 5,000 people who were hungry, he did not send them to the Department of Social Services and tell them to get some food stamps. He told his disciples, "You feed them."
That was the voice of author and speaker Star Parker, and she's absolutely right. Believers are charged to care for the destitute in their neighborhoods, not the government. And in just a moment, you'll hear the remainder of Star Parker's interview with Dr. James Dobson from many years ago. On yesterday's program, she shared how she pulled herself out of poverty and a life full of crime and addiction. Today, she'll talk about those who take advantage of the welfare system in numerous ways. She'll also address how the African American community in particular is harmed by this cycle. Star Parker is the founder and president of the Coalition on Urban Renewal and Education, also known as CURE. This organization seeks to end poverty by inspiring people to take personal financial responsibility for their own well-being. Star Parker also debates welfare reform all across the country and is a notable commentator and syndicated columnist as well. She is the author of Uncle Sam's Plantation, which once again will be the basis for today's broadcast. Now, there's a lot of content to get to today, so without further ado, here's Dr. Dobson to introduce Star Parker. You're listening to Family Talk, the radio broadcast ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute.
Star, we were talking last time about the difficulties in your early life, the rebellion. You had four abortions, which you just didn't even seem to comprehend as a problem. You kind of trivialized the whole thing and were deeply dependent upon welfare and so on. Let's get right back into that content. You've got in your book, Uncle Sam's Plantation, a description of three kinds of poor people. Describe those categories for me.
What I'm doing in chapter one is talking about poverty and trying to define it, because if we're going to be in a war that we spend the type of money we do, over $1 billion a day, I figured maybe we should know what poverty looks like. So I looked at the economically challenged, and God loves them. I mean, these are the ones that I believe that when Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount was talking about, you know, how blessed this group is, this is what he had in mind. But then we also have the lazy poor. And this is the group that took tremendous advantage of the compassion of Americans in the welfare state. Who knows? That idea may have worked if we did not start this whole entitlement mentality growing to where people actually believe that they do not have to be a part of their own life. I had bought into that. That's one of the reasons in my rebellious state that I could live so lawlessly and carefree is because I figured somebody else would clean up any mess behind me. You're just conditioned to believe these things when you're growing up in this type of situation.
They sort of owed it to you.
They owed it. That was one strong message in Black America and still is today. In fact, we have 40.
Is that related to the legacy of slavery?
So they try to attach it to the legacy of slavery. And I've even debated people like Jesse Jackson on this issue that keeps insisting that it's related. But yet, when you look at most of the social pathologies playing in Black America today, these are new phenomena. This wasn't 50 years ago. Black households were healthy during that time. They may have been poor, but they were healthy. And we did not see the escalation of just ill behavior, the violence, the lack of understanding that we should get an education and other things that we're seeing today. So I think a lot of it is just the idea that I don't have to think about it. And racism, or the perception of racism, is just an excuse. I use that excuse myself quite often. Not all America's racist anyway. Why do I need to mainstream? I'm not going to.
Well, there is racism in America, but you don't seem to be angry about it.
Well, because it's nothing that the politicians can do about it. I mean, let's face it, racism is like any other sin, a sin. And it's something that individuals will have to work through daily as they work through their lives. But it's not something that we can orchestrate some great master plan and one size fits all redistribution program about. How in the world would we ever even think that that could happen?
In fact, instead of solving it, it seems to me that the left tries to perpetuate that racism.
Well,
many of the movies create great anger, right, and hostility and violence.
I address that in my book as well, that just the term minority is a political term. And there is racism, as you just pointed out, but there's also a whole industry that's built off of the perception of racism.
Yeah.
And it's a few billion dollar industry. So you're absolutely right that those that can continue to further this idea and make people believe that America is not for them because somebody else is going to pull the rug from under them, give that group of people an excuse not to do what's best for their own lives. And for
have
their
you
children.
Found doors closed to you because of being black?
Well, I don't know. What kind of doors? Dr. Dobson, you know me. I'm going to go in any door, even if it's locked. I don't know.
You don't ask.
I don't think about that either. Yeah. I have fun being black. I just have a good time with it. And I believe that when God painted me black, it was for a purpose. And I think that even in our history, as dear as that is and as big a struggle as it was, like in any struggle or any pain, there is a purpose and there's deeper meaning. As you mentioned earlier in our private discussion about the loss of my 14-year-old, I'm having even a deeper understanding of the beauty in pain and in suffering. And so when you look at the struggle of blacks in this country, if we could just recognize that God placed me here for a purpose, then we would realize that we have a significance even being here in America. And so I have a good time with it. And most of my friends, even my white friends, we have a great time with it.
You have such a healthy attitude, Star. That's why I like you and how much I appreciate what you're trying to do, because you're really trying to teach some of those attitudes to both the black and the white community.
I think so, because most of the things that we're trying to solve politically, we can address ourselves just in our own personal relationships, just in our own personal time.
All right, let's get back to the third.
Okay, so the third group is the poor in spirit. And they are the ones that if we could do anything to help folks, this is the group that we should concentrate our attention on. So I spent time working and consulting on the federal welfare bill because I wanted the other group off, the lazy poor. Just cut them off. Let them understand that they have to mainstream their lives. The other group, the economically challenged, there are still things we need to do to reduce the tax burden, to stop the micromanagement and monopoly over education in their communities and allow for school choice. But the poor in spirit, the broken, those that have a crisis in their lives, the only way that we're going to really help them is when we start engaging them one-on-one.
Describe such a person. Give me an example.
Some of their pictures are just so sad, and I give a lot of personal stories of people that I've come across in my book. But they would be someone that perhaps grew up in an abusive household, and by the time they were of age to run away, they did run away, and they perhaps then got involved in prostitution, and they then themselves had children, and they're on drugs, and they just cannot manage their lives. And their children now have no other perspective of what life looks like. They're not sending them to school whatsoever. And they're just lost. They're in the inner cities. They're on the street corners.
And it goes on generation by generation.
And it just goes on generation after generation. But the beginning, I think, was in real brokenness. And that's why it's so important that the body of Christ that has the real answers engage themselves with them so that we can tenderly bring them back into the fold.
You know what? It seems to me most poverty is associated with the single mother.
Absolutely.
8% of children live in poverty, but 35% of the children from single parents, especially single mothers, live in poverty.
That's right.
And we start with morality.
We go right back to those principles of morality
and abstinence and the family. You know, before you fix the problem, let's prevent it. And that's one place to start.
It is absolutely. And that's why even though there were some that thought that welfare reform was a cruel measure, it was actually a big help measure, because what it did was said, you are going to have to start looking at your sexuality and what you're doing with this. You cannot live irresponsibly anymore. And the beautiful thing that's an unknown, you know, secret, because the media will not let them know, let the public know, is how many stories that we have of welfare moms who now have reengaged themselves with their homes, with their yeah. the husband, the father of the three children and other things. But you're absolutely right. If we don't start focusing ourselves on family life and stop these messages that you can just live any way that you want to, we're going to see more brokenness.
Do you talk to kids? Do you talk to junior hires, for example?
Sometimes. Actually, well, after I left welfare, I went into business a little while and then started working on these ideas in social policy. I started going more into the housing projects. And that's when I figured out, I can't do this by myself, and begin to engage the black churches. But I do some schools, mostly on the college level, to talk to those that are going into policy to try to help change their thinking when it comes to how we are going to help people. Is it public or private? But because the challenge is the way that the government has monopolized education, it's very difficult to bring a message of my sort into those schools. School environments. It's one of the reasons I'm adamantly supportive of school choice. I really believe that every church should be a school, and that they should deliberately go find these kids that are in broken situations and put them in these schools so that they can put a worldview in them yeah. that is consistent with the message maybe mom is delivering. All of these mothers are not just clueless. Some of them are doing everything they can, but they have a very limited resource. And then they have the media telling them that, oh, no, you don't yeah. want to listen to your mom. Then they have the school telling them, oh, you don't have to listen to that. Every institution in our society is 100% broken.
Let's wade into a really controversial area, Star. You're talking about the churches reaching out and helping. Mm-hmm. President Bush's faith-based initiative supposedly was intended to provide government money to the churches, among others, to distribute that money closer to home. You're opposed to that. Why?
I'm opposed to the direct grant aspect of the faith-based initiative. We live in the greatest faith-based initiative ever. It's called the United States of America. Letting benevolent people care for others. But what you have to do is remove barriers for them to do that. And the best way that we could get the money to the people doing the work is to allow taxpayers to say, I like that center. They're doing a great job over there. Let me give them my $1,000 and write it off of my obligation to the government, instead of the government rounding up these faith providers and having them come to Washington and try to figure out a program to get a federal grant. It's backwards, for one thing. Number two, when they try to pass rules that say no proselytizing, I think I have a problem with that. When Jesus said, preach the gospel to the poor, it's like, why would you pass a law that says no preaching the gospel?
You're not real big on the bureaucracy.
I am not big on, well, especially when you're talking about need. They don't have time for this. We put time clocks on these girls for 2 years. It's been 4 years that they're trying to figure out, how do we build a relationship with this group, while we're also marginalizing the ones that would never take a federal grant and making them smaller and have to be more competitive for the donations, because taxpayers are finicky. They figure, well, if I'm giving, you know, 30% of my paycheck and part of it's going to help the poor, why would I give more? So what we want to do is encourage, the same way we encourage family development through a child tax credit, we want to develop charity tax credits.
Star, do the Jesse Jacksons of the world really get angry at you?
Oh, I get
I mean, you're saying the opposite of
they don't
what
like me.
Saying.
As I mentioned in my book, the way that they've engineered this Uncle Sam's plantation is just like the plantations of the South, and they have gatekeepers, and these overseers are not pleased when one slave tries to escape, and I'm trying to free the slaves. So, no, they're not happy. We have 43 Congressional Black Caucus members who do not like this worldview whatsoever and will do anything to keep the welfare state as it is.
Why is the black community so vulnerable at this point?
I think the black community is vulnerable for change at this point, but the reason that blacks have traditionally bought into Democrat policy and Democrat representation is because of the civil rights movement. Life was very, very difficult, and Democrats were the ones that were there to say, we're going to make sure that you're not discriminated against. If you look at what's happened in black America over the last 50 years, the abortion, 40% of abortion, well, Margaret Sanger wanted to get rid of blacks. It was like genocide, these guys. So they were effectively able to work with the churches, and now it's hard-pressed to find a pastor who will step out and say, I'm pro-life and I'm, you know, going to make sure that we overturn Roe v. Wade. Well, the same thing happened in other areas as well, economic areas. When you look at the condition of black America, 65% of African Americans in the middle class work for some form of government. So there is a natural hostility against Republicans who say, limit government's role because they're looking at it personally to say, but that means my job. It's one of the reasons they have investments in affirmative action policy, because another 30% work for a government-funded corporation or government-subsidized corporation. You have affirmative action, they feel, there goes my job.
And yeah, so we have an iron triangle there.
The lies of the left are entrenched. As I mentioned, the Congressional Black Caucus leadership continues to say that racism is the reason that our communities are becoming worse, or in the problems that we're confronted with poverty. If we could just get these guys to redistribute more money, then we could solve some of your problems. And people believe that. On the other hand, there's no alternative message. Conservatives have stayed away for so long. God did us a favor when the Supreme Court ruled on Lawrence, because after the Lawrence decision down in Texas, the next thing you know, you have Massachusetts mayor. And when blacks heard their civil rights language on national TV coming out of people that we know are living sinful lifestyles. Now, blacks are very tolerant folks, but this was crossing the line.
Why? I saw some things I've never seen before. And, you know, I'm in an organization called the Arlington Group, and there's a great effort to reach out to black pastors, and I'm really excited about what I see happening.
I've had black ministers in my office that said, I've been a Democrat all my life, and when I saw those guys using our language on national television to promote this perversion, enough is enough. What I've attempted to do through CURE, and even in my writings with my book and my articles with Scripps Howard, is to help them connect this traditional worldview, their biblical worldview, with the way they also look at policy issues, because economically we do see that the scripture sees it one way and what the Democrats have been promoting is another way. We also see this in schools. There is no reason that the government should control the education within our inner cities.
What are you telling your daughter, Star?
Well,
what are you telling her about welfare?
Oh, she's...
She knows it by now, doesn't she?
My interesting that you would ask that. When you think about where I began with this girl, I mean, I used to leave her home. I was so into drugs and stuff. I would leave her home, and she was barely old enough to answer the door of the phone, and I would just leave her there and not even know what time I would return. But by being able to place her in a Christian school and able to then adopt a new worldview and try to help her with that, she married young. She's married today, and her and her husband are doing, you know, pretty well. And she works with me part-time. Running my office. And I just believe that when you show kids one way to go and you live that example, that, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be able to live it. But we know that it's not always true. I mean, we cannot look at a one-size-fits-all model or say that if I do step 1, 2, 3, and 4, it's all going to work out, because my second daughter is as beautiful a child as she was and was just my right hand. Everyone knew her very well and just loved the Lord. Made one bad choice, and it cost her her life.
Yeah, she died under very unfortunate circumstances, and I know you don't want to go into it, and I won't ask you, but our people should pray for you.
You know, I don't mind talking about it, because I think that, in fact, I know, because I have had to work these things through personally. I know that when the Lord looks at our lives and he tells us that he loves us, and when people are in this type of pain to where they have to actually bury somebody that they love dearly and they cannot understand all the questions surrounded in it, and you go through the 100 questions in your mind of what if, should have, and all these things, that the Lord is just so precious that he just gave me new meaning and a sense of being in Psalm 23, Psalm 139, and Psalm 145. And this just became like my medicine every day.
She would have been with you on this trip.
Oh, absolutely.
You were very
sidekick, that was my little sidekick. But, you know, unfortunately, her life ended soon. But if I look at all that God delivered me from, to even have had the ability to have her, because I've counseled women. I work in crisis pregnancy work all across this country. In fact, I'm on the board for CareNet, and we umbrella about 700 crisis pregnancy centers in the country, and we're trying to get some in the inner city now. And I have counseled women who have had one abortion one time, and they agonized over that, and now they can't have any children. They're
yeah. And you have so, four.
And
abortions.
I look at and then got this beautiful gift, and I got to keep her for 14 years. I really look at the blessing in what I had there. I would love to have had her for longer, but just the 14 years I had, I'm just very encouraged by.
Star, I find you fascinating to talk to. The title of your book is Uncle Sam's Plantation: How Big Government Enslaves America's Poor and What We Can Do About It. And I believe that. And we were talking at break time about the fact that if we're not careful, your message starts to sound like a lack of compassion, mm-hmm. you know, as though you really don't care about hurting people and poor people. That's not true at all. Mm-mm. You're looking for what's best for them.
What's best
and
for
government
them.
Is not best for them.
No, it isn't. When Jesus said, go and sin no more, he did her a favor.
Hmm. And the Lord has done a work in your life,
too. Done a work in my life.
Do you realize, I'm sure it's a rhetorical question, but what the probabilities were when you were 18 years old that you would be sitting here today talking about this subject and writing this book and being influential like you are in this way?
Well, I have thought about it, and I thank God that he's called me to this great work because I figure if he can save me, then surely he can do it for the rest of them that are out there just in despair. And so I've just dedicated my life to being a hope and an encouragement. And in the political front, I figured I'll do the Harriet Tubman. While they're trying to come up with some political formula, I'm going to go get one out at a time because they just don't belong to Uncle Sam. God has a much bigger plan and purpose for their lives. People should be engaged in other people's lives. And there is something in it for all of us, because when we have a healthy society, we don't need government intruding in every area of our life. And for people that are in welfare and they're struggling through how they're going to meet the deadlines as well as how they're going to re-engage their lives in society, I think that we should be encouraged to know that God will help them for one thing, but then also when they go through the classes that they're instructed to go through now, they should pull out the jewels that are available within those classes to establish themselves some goals. And they might be little goals in the beginning. One of the things that I teach in my goal-setting workshops to welfare moms is that perhaps they should share an apartment with somebody else so that they can share babysitting responsibilities so one can go back to night school and do other things to start re-engaging in their own life. I think that if people are feeling benevolent, then they should go to their church and to their pastor and say, maybe we could start a little program here. And if we're far from a crisis area, which really they're not, I mean, the people are hurting all over society. It's not just in our inner cities. But if they are far and they happen to live in an area that, you know, perhaps is doing pretty well, then maybe that church should look for ways and partnerships with others that do have need, that need is overwhelming. One of the things I find in the inner city is the problems are so overwhelming to these churches that they don't know where to begin. They don't have the resources to do it all, and they don't know which part they should do. So if there's a specialist out in the suburbs, maybe they can teach that to the inner city urban ministry, and then that church can become one of its strategic ministry partners.
And this is the answer. This is the answer. The answer is the church. The answer is Jesus Christ. The answer is not government. And I certainly agree with you on that point. Thank you, Star.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, what an eye-opening broadcast about the millions of people who live in poverty and need our help. I'm Roger Marsh, and if you'd like a copy of Star Parker's book, Uncle Sam's Plantation, visit drjamesdobson.org. On our broadcast page, you'll find a link to her book, along with information about her organization, CURE. Simply go to drjamesdobson.org and then click on the broadcast icon at the top of the page. Are you looking for resources that encourage and guide you and your family? Well, be sure to sign up for Dr. Dobson's valuable monthly newsletter. Every month, Dr. Dobson takes time to write personal thoughts on tough issues that you may be facing in your family. We want you to have this resource without cost or further obligation. So call 877-732-6825, and a member of our broadcast team will be happy to send you a copy of any of our newsletters. Again, that number is 877-732-6825. Well, thanks so much for tuning in today, and thanks also for your prayers and your faithful financial support of this ministry. We are so grateful for listeners just like you who continue to pray for us and make your faithful financial support known for the Dobson Family Institute. Learn how you can stand with us by going to drjamesdobson.org. You can also call us toll-free at 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. Please remember that we are a listener-supported ministry, and we thank you for constantly giving to the mission of the Dobson Family Institute. Join us again for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
This is James Dobson again. Before we go, I'd like to remind you that Family Talk is a listener-supported program. If you've enjoyed this broadcast, we'd appreciate your helping to keep us on the air. As you know, we talk about everything from religious liberty to the sanctity of human life and raising boys and girls, among others. These are the passions of our hearts, and I hope they are for you, too. Thank you so much for listening and for being part of this ministry. For more information, go to drjamesdobson.org.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton. Thank you so much for listening today to Family Talk, a radio production of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. I wanted to take a moment to tell you a little bit about our growing ministry here. This new institute is continuing Dr. Dobson's life work by fighting for marriages and families. It's no secret that our Christian values are under attack, and we must stand up for righteousness and biblical truth unashamedly. We believe this new institute is doing just that. Aside from our Family Talk broadcast, there are three other divisions through which we're continuing this legacy of work. The first one is our educational partnerships with colleges and universities to encourage the next generation. Secondly is the Dobson Policy Center. It keeps you informed on how the political arena influences the family. And lastly is our online collection of all of Dr. Dobson's work in the Dobson Digital Library. We're excited here at JDFI for this expansion. We hope you'll partner with us. Thanks for standing with us, and thanks for being a friend of the family.